Today, Kiwis get another mega rate cut as inflation sits in band. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Here's a question for you. Would you prefer to be living in New Zealand or Australia? The New Zealand story on monetary policy and home prices is a million miles away from the RBA's approach of keeping rates lower to protect jobs, even if inflation remains above target. Across the ditch, the Reserve Bank's approach of no regrets took interest rates much higher, lifted unemployment, and pulled home prices lower. And as a result of that more aggressive action, the land of the long white cloud appears better placed in the months ahead. The New Zealand Monetary Policy Committee agreed to lower the official cash rate by a further 50 basis points to 3.75% this week, and they reported that annual consumer price inflation remains near the midpoint of the Monetary Policy Committee's 1-3% target band. Firms' inflation expectations are at target, and core inflation continues to fall towards the target midpoint. The economic outlook remains consistent with inflation remaining in the band over the medium term, giving the committee confidence to continue lowering the official cash rate. That said, economic activity in New Zealand remains subdued, with spare productive capacity, domestic inflation pressures continue to ease. Price and wage setting behaviour are adapting to a low inflation environment, they said, and the price of imports has fallen, and that also contributed to lower headline inflation. However, economic growth is expected to recover during 2025. Low interest rates will encourage spending, although elevated global economic uncertainty is expected to weigh on business investment decisions. Higher prices for some key commodities and a lower exchange rate will increase export revenues. And employment growth is expected to pick up in the second half of the year as the domestic economy recovers. The level of uncertainty, though, is pretty high, as global economic growth is expected to remain subdued in the near term. Geopolitics, including uncertainty about trade barriers, is likely to weaken global growth, they said. And global economic activity is also likely to remain fragile over the medium term, given the increasing geopolitical fragmentation. As a result, consumer price inflation in New Zealand is expected to be volatile in the near term due to a low exchange rate and higher petrol prices. The net effect of future changes in trade policy on inflation in New Zealand is currently unclear. Nevertheless, they say the committee is well placed to maintain price stability over the medium term. Having consumer price inflation close to the middle of its target band puts the committee in the best position to respond to future inflationary shocks. Now, I always find the Kiwi approach to talking about monetary policy a BS-free zone, with some good questions asked.
Perhaps just give us a little more on where you go to from here. Are you expecting to slow down with your rate cuts to move in 25-point steps, or is a 50-point move still, you know, on the table?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, we put a forward path in our economic outlook. And again, for those on television, should someone have been stuck on the wrong channel, do have a look at the monetary policy statement in there. We always provide what we call a forward path conditional on the economy evolving as discussed in this document. In this document, we are looking at lowering the official cash rate a little bit quicker than what we projected back in November, but that's around 50 basis points by mid this year, you know, around July. And in the document, that comes broadly in 225 basis point steps. It doesn't stop there. We have our projection of the OCR being around 3% by year end.
And if you do slow the pace of your easing, could you speak to some of the reasons behind that? As you've mentioned uncertainties around global trade policies. Would that be one of the reasons?
Not so much. I mean, we are well poised to deal with whatever the next unanticipated shock is. Really, it's saying that we feel that inflation is subsiding. Core price inflation is still above the midpoint, and we are just easing with more regular graduation from here. But through it all, Economic growth is positive, around the 2.5% annual. Employment growth is picking back up, but inflation and the spare capacity is slowly easing.
Lucy from Reuters. We obviously had GDP data out at the end of December that was worse than we expected. How much has that played into the decision today and the change to the OCR track lower?
Yeah, I'll let Paul Conway, our chief economist, talk about the excitement of official GDP statistics.
Thank you, Adrian and Lucy. And yeah, it has been quite an exciting ride for those of us focused on GDP. So the revisions were very large this time around, and what they meant was higher capacity pressures than we were first led to believe over 2023 and early 2024. And that was actually more consistent with inflation dynamics in the economy. So it sort of made sense, that relationship between output, capacity pressures and underlying inflation sort of snapped into shape for us. And then, of course, we had a bigger downward revision in GDP in the middle of this year. But net out the back of all of that, our measure of the output gap was slightly more negative than in November, partly because of the revisions, but it hasn't made a huge impact on the forward path for capacity pressures in the economy. So it hasn't been a major driver of that change in the OCR track.
So do you want to just talk to what were the significant drivers of the change in the OCR track?
Yeah, so, you know, what we're looking at here is an economy that has the euphemism significant spare capacity. It means that it is growing slower than the potential growth rate, and it means that work and investment activity is below what it could happen, what it could maintain without inflation. So we still have downward pressure on inflation. That has been basically the same since last November. You know, it's three shades of grey. Looking at the projections ahead, they've been remarkably similar. What Paul was saying was we, the central bank, was really discounting the previous GDP material a lot because we saw far more inflation and pressure in the economy than what the official stats, GDP stats, were saying over the period 2024. We moved quite quickly when the high frequency data started to decline in mid-2024, and that has proved correct. We were prudent to remain cautious as opposed to jump to the GDP status, and then we took the risk of moving with the higher frequency data as we started seeing that come off. So general story is very much the same regarding the economic drivers and the inflation outcome, and we've been very pleased that that has been the case. In fact, over the last 18 months, it has played out broadly as we have anticipated, in part because we've been, touch wood, the absence of major global shocks.
Actually, it's worth watching the whole event. Links are below. Two remarkable points came out during their rather fun press conference, which I want to highlight. The first is that the official data on GDP growth from Stats New Zealand, which is produced quarterly, underreported the true state of play to the point the bank relied more on real-time data like producer prices. Now the official figures have caught up, and they significantly match the bank's own modelling. The second is that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has been cutting for a while, and house prices haven't been rising. The 40% run-up in prices over the pandemic has been followed by the sharpest price crash in generations. Even so, price-to-income ratios remain elevated relative to historical experience, especially given the current interest rate settings. Whilst median home price to median household disposable income has come down, we're still around 10 times in Auckland and over 8 times nationally. Indeed, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has amped up its controls on mortgage lending, with both debt-to-income and loan-to-value ratio measures to ensure home prices do not run off to the races again. And in fact, there was some interesting commentary on that in the press conference. Now, all this takes us neatly to the latest figures from the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand for January, which they said showed some positive signs across the New Zealand property market, though tempered with the usual slowness of the holiday period. Sales and listings were higher compared to January 2024, they said, and open home volumes were strong across the country, with a positive sentiment shown from buyers. They said steady and improving is the feedback, with the next few months looking busier with a strong pipeline of properties coming to the market, aka listings are up. As expected, during the summer holiday period, sales were up 17.5% from 3,212 to 3,774 compared to January 2024, but were down month on month by 37.6% from 6,048 to 3,774 across New Zealand compared to December 2024. For New Zealand, excluding Auckland, sales saw a 23.4% year-on-year rise from 2,318 to 2,861. Notable growth in sales were observed in Marlborough, up 62.5%, and the West Coast, up 47.4% year-on-year, while all regions saw a decrease in sales month-on-month. The median price for New Zealand decreased slightly, down 1.7% from $763,000 to $750,000 year-on-year. Excluding Auckland, the median price increased 0.9% year-on-year, rising from $685,000 to $691,500. Only 8 out of 16 regions report an increase in median prices compared to January 2024. Gisborne have the highest increase, up 28.2%, from $515,000 to $660,000, followed by Nelson with a 25.4% increase from $670,000 to $840,000, which is a record for the region. The REINZ spin on all this is that January is traditionally a slower month as New Zealand enjoys its holidays. Year on year, January shows prices holding steady. Buyers are still enjoying the choices on offer thanks to rising listing numbers and significant levels of properties for sale. First home buyers and owner occupiers are still the largest group at Open Homes, with salespeople reporting investor interest in pockets of the country. Holiday hotspots like Taupo and Nelson were also seeing interest from visitors from other parts of the country. With vendors being realistic in their price expectations and meeting the market, there is a positive sentiment out there amongst agents, they said. Overall, listings nationally increased year on year by 21.2% from 7,347 to 8,904, the highest level of listings for January since 2015. Excluding Auckland, listings rose by 21.9% compared to January 2024, from 4,886 to 5,956. Northland was the only region that didn't report an increase in listings compared to last year. The most significant gains were reported in the West Coast, up 100%, Otago up 52.4% and Gisborne up 45.7%. National inventory levels increased by 18.9% year-on-year and also increased by 10% compared to December. All regions are seeing an increase in stock numbers, with Gisborne, Marlborough and Otago leading the way. In January, there were just 263 auctions nationally, or 7% of all sales. That was an increase from the previous year, but a sharp decrease from December, as usually happens due to the holidays over January. The national median days to sell rose by 3 days to 54 days compared to the previous year, excluding Auckland, increased by 5 to 54 days. And the house price index for New Zealand is currently at 3,606, indicating a decrease of 1.4% year on year and 0.2% compared to December 2024. Over the past 5 years, the average growth rate of New Zealand's HPI has been around 4.3%. However, it's currently 15.7% lower than its peak back in 2021. So standing back, the different paths between the central banks of Australia and New Zealand really stand out, which begs the question, is a shorter, sharper shock or a slow grind with no clear way out the better path? And should stronger controls on mortgage lending be imposed to keep house prices under control? Oh, and yes, and the elephant in the room, should migration be dialed back, as in New Zealand, where Stats NZ reported that 72,000 citizens left the country, while just 24,900 arrived, and the overall net loss of citizens in 2024 is the largest in a calendar year? Or should migration be pushed hard, despite the rhetoric, as in Australia? So frankly, to me, on so many fronts, New Zealand seems in better, if in perfect hands, than Australia. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.